Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
That story you had about the woman crying and being charged on her doctor's bill, what was all that about?
Yeah, this has gone viral in New York City. Well, it's gone viral on the internet, on social media. A woman went to the doctor in New York, and after receiving some information about her medical condition, said she broke down in tears. She says when she received the bill later, she had a $40 charge on there for an emotional consult. After the doctor's office claims they gave her a brief evaluation based on her emotional state. Her sister says they just ignored her and let her cry and was amazed they charged her $40 because she cried.
So it's bad enough they charged her, but the woman's saying they charged her for nothing. If they had done something, it would be, I guess, one thing, which would still seem kind of silly.
Yes.
But, you know, if you look at
either way, it's,
you know, what
silly,
a doctor but, yeah, is supposed to do and everything. But they didn't even do that.
Not according to her sister, who says that they just kind of let her cry.
Do you ever look at your doctor's bills at all?
I do, because sometimes they get it wrong. Sometimes the billing information's not right, and I have to say, hey, did you forget to run the insurance? Oh, yeah, we did. We forgot to run the insurance. I've had that happen several times where I get billed the full cost of the visit or procedure or whatever for a family member.
I get that, but I mean like an itemized sheet. Do you ever go down the sheet and see what they charge you for? Like, if you've, I don't know how long, if you've ever been in a hospital or not.
I've never been admitted to a hospital.
I can't make sense of any of that. Don't say that. Take it back.
Knock on microphone. Never been in jail, never been in a hospital.
There you go. All right. Knock on something.
But yes, I have. I had a family member who was hospitalized several years ago. And looking down the list of everything from a Band-Aid to a bottle of water to, I mean, there's nothing they don't scan and put into that system. If it enters your room, you're paying for it. And often it's a lot more than you think it would be.
And if you're a lone wolf like I am and don't really have any family and you're in a hospital by yourself, you know, you're all doped up with whatever pain medicine because they had the knee replacement. I don't know what the hell they did.
And I have actually heard horror stories of people who are in that situation when they don't know what's going on, where you're either charged for something you don't get or there's something that you are supposed to get that, well, maybe it's a medication that never gets into you and ends up in somebody else's hands because there's no one there. That's why.
And again, they're the procedures that you'd much rather get charged for and not actually have done to you.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah, that's
right?
Why if I have a loved one in the hospital, we are the family that someone stays with them every minute of every day. Even if it's, you know, just a minor thing, if they've been admitted to the hospital, we take turns sleeping in the recliner and hanging out with them and keeping them company because that's the worst time ever, just sitting there by yourself in a hospital.
It is. The bill here says you performed, insert your own unpleasant medical procedure here, but I don't think you actually did, and it's on the bill. Well, we won't take it off the bill, but you can come in and we'll perform it. No, thank you. I'm fine.
Oh, you want the procedure? Come on in. We'll do it.
No. Let's just forget I ever called. Who's this? I can't hear you. Bring it up. Thank you, Dave. We would like to welcome to WWL Daniel Wallace, Louisiana's new state fire marshal. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
I'm okay. Congratulations on being named the fire marshal for the state of Louisiana.
Thank you very much. It's an honor to serve.
Tell me a little bit about yourself. Growing up, did you know you wanted to be a fireman?
Well, actually, when I was probably 16 or 17 years old, I joined the local volunteer fire department, had a junior firefighter program, and participated in it. And I literally drank the Kool-Aid and from a very young age, and just progressed from there. Got out of high school, took a couple of different turns, but kept winding back up at the fire station. And so at 19 years old, I applied for a position and was hired, and I've been there ever since in the Louisiana Fire Service.
What were some of those different roads you went down? I'm just curious.
So when I first got out of high school, one of the biggest things back in the late 70s was there was a big push for industrial professionals. And I went to trade school to learn to be a machinist. And I did quite well in school. And that's, of course, that's where the money was at the time. And that's actually what I was kind of chasing. I got a job, and every day when I went to work, I just kept thinking about the fire service. And every afternoon I would go to the local fire station and volunteer. And it's really what I wanted to do. And so instead of trying to follow the dollar, I started following my heart. And that's when I applied for the fire service job.
What kind of kid were you growing up?
Well, so my father and mother had a grocery store in Zachary, Louisiana. And I was a typical boy. There were two brothers and a sister, and I didn't get into a lot of trouble. I enjoyed reading. I enjoyed being active in different groups in school. I was in the Beta Club. I was in the Spirit Club. I played baseball. Just a typical kid. I never gave my parents any problems. They might say differently. However, I think that having raised my own son, I think I was fairly typical.
What is it that attracted you to firefighting, you think?
Well, I think the first thing was the word service, I guess. I just always liked being a people. I'm a people person. I enjoyed being around people. I enjoyed helping people. Even as a young person, when people would come into my dad's store, I was always engaged in conversation, always very in tune to what people's needs were. And when I got to the fire department and I was allowed to see just what the firefighters did on a regular basis, I was just awestruck. And also, as a 16 or 17, I witnessed a lady go into cardiac arrest and initiated CPR. And about 30 days later, 60 days later, I got a call to come to the fire station. I went to the fire station, and the lady had baked me a cake and said, "Thank you for saving my life." So, buddy, that was it. I was on, and that was a wonderful. That doesn't happen to everyone, but that was my sign.
I'll bet it was. We're talking to the new fire marshal for the state of Louisiana, going up close and personal with him, finding out what he's all about, Daniel Wallace from Zachary, Louisiana, which is due north of Baton Rouge. A quick break on WWL, and then we'll continue our conversation. I'm Tommy Tucker, back in a flash. 9:22 now on this Monday morning, May 23rd, hot and humid, highs of 84, maybe a pretty good chance for showers in the afternoon, but they don't know. It's summertime right now. We're talking to Daniel Wallace, Louisiana State Fire Marshal, newly appointed, who replaces Butch Browning. We thought we'd go up close and personal with him because I presume, Daniel, you're going to be the fire marshal, state fire marshal for a while, right?
Yeah, that's. I think, you know, as I look towards the future, I'm feeling really good about the position, feeling really good about myself. Certainly, it's an honor to serve in this position, and it's as long as I'm effective, and as long as the people and the governor chooses to keep me in this position, I'll be right here.
Somebody texted in here, and by the way, I will bring the audience into it if you have any questions or comments for the new state fire marshal, 504-260-1870. Somebody texted in, what do you think about all of the smoking going on in public housing? Is that something that the fire marshal deals with?
Well, certainly we look at all of the residential occupancies in regards to fire safety, and smoke alarms is our first line of defense, and it's our goal to have a working functional smoke alarm in every home in the state of Louisiana. So from the standpoint of smoking, typically in the public housing sector, it is regulated by the local authorities. However, it may be something we need to look at in the future. And certainly we're not opposed to stepping out and going beyond some of the things that we've done in the past. So if this appears to be a significant problem, then certainly we'll address it.
Talk about the state fire marshal. What is it exactly that you do in that office?
Well, there's several hats. And I'd like to say that they're the men and women who serve this agency are very professional and do a fine job. But we do everything from reviewing the plans for commercial occupancies when there's either a new building being built or a change of occupancy of a building. We have a series of architects and engineers that will review those plans to ensure that they're compliant with the applicable codes from the standpoint of fire and life safety. And then we go to our inspection section, and we have we're about 100 inspectors that are cross-trained to do fire inspections as well as fire investigations and other inspections. So we regulate building safety from the standpoint of fire and life safety. We regulate boilers in the state of Louisiana and commercial occupancies. We regulate the installation of manufactured housing, amusement rides, healthcare facilities, and the list goes on and on. So there are multiple different disciplines that we touch with the professionals that work here.
When you say amusement rides and you think about what happened in Florida with that young man who was thrown off of the ride, that would be something that the Louisiana fire marshal in this state would look at when a carnival sets up or whatever. You guys go out and check out the rides, or am I wrong there?
So absolutely. So we regulate the folks that are the owners and installers of these rides. And we do random audits. So there's a series of processes that they have to go through daily when they set those rides up. And then we send our inspectors out and randomly audit these people. And I think the bigger part of all of it is the educational process. So we do have occasional education classes where we bring our professionals out and try to mentor and coach the folks that are either installing or operating these rides.
Somebody texted in, do fire stations still hire paramedics for staff?
Well, actually, I think the fire service is evolving to a more first response agency from the standpoint of medical. So not all fire departments have a medical arm, but I would say the vast majority of the departments that I'm affiliated with have that first response or engine company paramedics or EMTs that respond to the medical calls. So the answer would be yes.
Are you inheriting any cases that are left open for investigation that would be, I don't know about Natalie Crentel, I think is the lady's name. I don't have it in front of me right now, but is that a fire investigation? Has that been turned over to the police, or where does that stand? Do you know?
Damn. Well, I haven't had the opportunity to review cases. Certainly there, you know, as the agency never stopped, so we continued with the process. There's obviously multiple open cases, and that one in particular, I'm not really sure where we are with it. But we have a special investigations unit that take these multiple cases on, and it's a series of detectives that work the cases. And so at this time, I haven't talked to them to find out just what's in their backlog or what's on their plate right now. I think they're a very robust team of professionals, and they do a great job.
Let me clear that up. The lady's name was Nanette Krentel, and it was certainly my error, and I don't want to be disrespectful in any way, shape, or form. In terms of things that you'd like to do differently than your predecessor did, are there some things, Daniel Wallace, as state fire marshal, you'd like to do differently?
Well, so, you know, Butch Browning is a personal friend of mine. He and I have been friends for a very, very long time. We've kind of mentored and coached each other, and I served as his assistant for since 2008. So there are multiple projects that are ongoing, so certainly we want to support those projects. The smoke alarm project is probably the nearest and dearest to my heart, and I think it's important that we help continue to draw that. There'll never be an end to that project, so it's an ongoing project. But I would like to, one of the things I'd like to help the Louisiana Fire Service address, it's been an ongoing problem for multiple years, is the recruitment and retention of volunteer firefighters. So, you know, in today's environment, you're dealing with, I guess, maybe a different culture from the standpoint of jobs are requiring a lot more people, families requiring a lot more people, and volunteerism on multiple levels seems to have decreased. And so what do we have to do in the Louisiana Fire Service to support that? I don't know what that looks like right now, but certainly I think that would probably be one of the biggest things we could do for the Louisiana Fire Service. I think the number's around 85% of the departments in the state of Louisiana are either a combination of volunteers and career staff or all volunteer departments. So we want to support those departments and serve as a resource to them.
What kind of training does a volunteer get?
Well, so initial training should be the basic Firefighter 1 certification class. And then from there, there's a series of weekly, sometimes weekly or monthly classes that are some skill-based and some are didactic-based, but everything from basic firefighting skills to emergency medical response skills to start operating and safely driving the fire apparatus. It just goes on and on. So just hats off to the volunteers. It's required 20 hours of training per month per volunteer to get optimum, to optimize the credit for training for the fire rating. And I don't know if you're familiar with the fire rating, but Property Insurance Association of Louisiana rates the fire departments. And so in order to get full credit for training, each volunteer has to put in 20 hours of training per month. And that's a huge, huge undertaking and takes a large commitment.
20 hours of training every month?
That is correct. To receive optimum credit for training, 20 hours per month. And so that's what I say. I mean, so you take anyone in there that has another occupation or doing something else, it is a daunting task to try to maintain those certifications and maintain the volunteer fire service. And I will say that there are multiple volunteer firefighters who get that 20 hours a month. We are trying as an agency just this year. The State Fire Marshal's Office has taken over the State Fire Training Academy. And one of the first things, in fact, we're in the middle, I just checked on it this morning, the middle of our first online blended learning. So a combination of using some online class and then followed up by the skill set. And we're wanting to bring the training to the people instead of bring the people to the training. It's our belief that the volunteer firefighter that lives the farthest from that training academy in Baton Rouge should have the abilities to receive the same training as a volunteer firefighter who lives next door.
What does that training look like in terms of 20 hours a week? I'm just curious.
20 hours a month. So,
a month, rather. I'm sorry. Yeah, 20 hours a week would be onerous for sure.
Yeah. So you look in and you look at basic skills. I mean, all of the skills from ladders to like I said, apparatus to maintenance of the hose and advancing hose lines, ventilation, and goes on and on. You know, the technical side of firefighting becomes, you know, as things change, materials, building materials and so forth, you know, hazardous materials is huge. And so what do you do in a hazardous materials situation? How do you mitigate that? And then, of course, here in the state of Louisiana, you know, one of our, if you start looking at all of the different emergencies that we respond to, a big component, certainly as of the last 10 years, have been response to natural disasters. And so that's another component of training that we work alongside of the officers and the professionals in Homeland Security and offer training to our local firefighters.
Is the volunteer model unique to Louisiana or is that all over the country?
No, sir. It's pretty much all over the country. I will say that the combination departments now, I think, are probably becoming a little more prevalent. The fact that not only does a person have to train, but there's also you have to maintain the equipment, you have to maintain the trucks, you have to test the hose, and there are multiple things. So that I think nationwide, at the International Fire Association of Fire Chiefs, on multiple occasions have studied recruitment and retention. And I still don't know that we have an adequate answer, but I think that this online model and this blended learning model from the standpoint of training is going to put us far ahead of those who don't employ those particular tactics.
What about age and physical ability or size or shape or being in shape and all those kind of things? I guess what I'm trying to ask is who would be eligible to become a volunteer firefighter, Daniel?
Well, depending on, you know, so at the volunteer firefighter, you know, we typically think of the firefighter as the person that actually advances the hose lines, goes into the buildings and do and work at rescuing the folks and putting the fire out. However, there are other positions, fire apparatus driver, safety officer. There are other positions that would not prohibit someone that has maybe the physical qualifications to qualify as a firefighter. So certainly the firefighter qualification itself for those that are advanced to the hose lines is set in NFPA standards, National Fire Protection Association standards. However, I will tell you that from the standpoint of volunteer firefighters, I think we're at a situation now where you know everyone has a role and everyone has the ability to serve in some function. So, is everyone currently as firefighters at the same level? No, the answer to that is no. But nationally, and again, nationally, like I said, National Fire Protection Association studies these things. NFPA 1500 addresses firefighter safety. And so that's I think you're going to see a lot more or a bigger push for the fire service to become more aware of the physical standards and the physical needs and supporting those physical needs for these volunteer and career firefighters.
Is there, first of all, what about age? Is there an age limit here or not?
Well, that depends on the department. I mean, there's no standard that tells you the age. Typically, it's 18 years old and then on up. So, I mean, there are functional volunteer firefighters that are in their 60s and that are functioning. Is it optimum? I'm not certain. I mean, I'm 61 years old, and I'd like to think I could still do the same things that I did when I was 18. But I know that, you know, depending on the person and depending on the department, what those standards would be.
Finally, before we let you go, I'm just wondering, when it is time for you to leave, what mark would you like to leave on the department? On the your office and fire safety in general.
I'm glad you asked. Well, first of all, you know, I'd like to be regarded as the common sense firefighter that became state fire marshal, and that our goal is to have a functional smoke alarm in every residential structure in the state of Louisiana. That's how we solve the problem. We solve the problem by alerting the occupants of the home before the fire starts. Fire prevention is all about people taking that responsibility to protect themselves. And that's kind of what I would like to be reminded and remembered, and a friend to the Louisiana Fire Service. Again, it's our responsibility. Although we don't have regulatory authority over the fire departments, we need to be that resource. We need to be the person that the fire chiefs can call or the firefighters can call and say, we need training, we need help, we need your assistance.
One thing to clear up, somebody texted in, when it comes to these amusement rides, carnivals that set up at parish fairs or what have you, is there a mandatory inspection by a fire department or a local municipal fire department before those rides can go into effect or at least start operating? Or is it just a spot check of every now and then they'll check one?
Well, to my knowledge, there's no regulation unless the local authorities have a regulation. So on the local side, but from the state side, I'm not certain. Again, this being my first full week, I'm not certain if we do 100% of them, but I know that we target most of them to go out and do the inspection on. I'm not certain where we are with that now, but that is something we could get back with you on. I do know, and like I said, that industry is it's very well policed by our deputies through a series of spot checks, as well as their daily maintenance logs come to our office. But more important than that is that it's the training that we offer and train people to do the right thing at the right time for the right reason.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate your time and good luck. Daniel Wallace, Louisiana State Fire Marshal, replacing Butch Browning.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.